Well, today is a bit of a special day. Last year, on Orphan Sunday, I agreed that I'd let my wife take a little bit of time to share her heart and her passion. And as it turned out, she pushed me out of my pulpit last year. And so this year I planned ahead. I didn't even plan to preach. And so today, my wife Renee will be coming up here, and she's going to be sharing what's on her heart as it pertains to widows and orphans and those that God has called us to care for.
Several months ago, even before I knew that it was that they called it that day, I kind of thought, this year I want to focus on foster care. That's where, I mean, we've been for the whole year, pretty much. So I guess I'll give a little bit of background. When Derek and I, before we even got married, we had discussed becoming foster parents, adopting, things like that. And part of that came from our pastor and his wife were foster parents for delinquent teenage girls. They had girls in their home that I was scared of. But I saw them make a difference in the lives of those girls and in the lives of those families. So after we got married, we finished college, we moved back to Iowa, and we became foster parents. So these are our first foster kids, not all those kids. The two in the middle, the one with the blue ribbon who's not looking at the camera, and the one with the red ribbon who's also not looking at the camera. That's pretty much the story of my life, is nobody looks at the camera. That is Billy and Jeff, and they were 6 and 7 when they came to us. We celebrated birthdays with them that year that they were with us, and they turned 7 and 8. They were about 11 months apart in age, and they were crazy little boys. But we had no experience. We didn't have any kids, so we didn't know. So we just did the best we could with them. I was about 23. No, I was probably about 23. And we were parenting like 6 and 7 year olds. So it was fun. We had some challenges, but we didn't know any better and they didn't really either. So I think we probably made it seem not as bad as it was. So after them, we had Dakota, who I will talk about in a little while. But after that, Hold on. Can I back this up anymore? Sorry, I am not as technology sound as my husband is. So he's got the second controller back there to help me out. So this is Anthony. He actually came to us, and I shared a little bit about him last year. He came to us at 8 weeks old with shaken baby syndrome. And we didn't know what he was going to be like. We didn't know if he'd walk or talk. We didn't know if he would really do anything. He ended up moving to an adoptive family after we'd had him for about 9 months. And he is doing fantastic. He's learning to read. He's 7, or will be in January. He's learning to read. He walks all over. He talks all the time. He's adorable. He's still super cute. So he was the one that we had right up until just before he moved to Colorado. He moved from us at Christmas. We moved in February to Colorado. So I never really thought a lot about the number of kids in foster care. You know, when we were in Iowa, we didn't get a lot of placements. I can't say we didn't get a lot of placements. We didn't have a large number of children in our home because of the space that we were allowed in that we had in our home. Iowa is super duper strict about your space. So you have to have a certain amount of square footage per child in a bedroom. So we could only take, once Dylan was born, one kid at a time. And so we didn't realize the huge need, because sometimes our house would sit empty for months. So doing some research for this, there's a website that I like to go to. It's called togetherwerise.org. And part of their stuff is that they work with the foster care community. The most recent numbers that they had up was that 1,200 kids enter foster care in the United States every day. Every day. In North Dakota, there are around 1,200 kids annually on average at any given time in the foster care system. 59 of these age out of foster care. That means that they grow up and they turn 18 and they go out into the world with no family, no one that's their own that they can go home to at Christmas or Thanksgiving. You know, and they might have a foster family that just couldn't adopt them, but still allows, you know, wants them to be a part of the family. Or maybe the child doesn't want to be adopted. That happens. But I'm still thinking that's 59 kids that don't have parents. And that right now, there are approximately 250 kids in the state of North Dakota that are available for adoption. That means that their parental rights have been terminated and they are waiting for a family. So I talked to our social worker this last week about our local numbers. You know, she covers, I'm not exactly all of the counties, but it's called Dakota Central. So it's like Garrison, I think out to Halliday. I don't know if they go as far as Glen Ullin, here in Beulah and Hazen, all the way out to Washburn and Stanton. She said that there are currently 40 to 42 children in placement in this area. We have what she originally told me 11, but then she was like, no, wait, we have 12 foster families in this area. We just had another one get licensed, so that was really exciting. So if you do the math, that means that there's space for 48 kids in this region, and there's 42 kids in placement. But wait, we are one of the few families that takes four. So if you back up, let's say most families can only take two, which makes a huge difference, but it also drops the number of kids that are able to be accommodated in our area. So I said, so what do you do? I mean, you hear these stories out of other states where kids are in hotels with social workers, like that's where they live now because they don't have any place for them. She said generally what happens here is sometimes kids are placed with family members, which helps alleviate the pressure on the foster families. But she said, we also have a lot of waivers going on right now. So I think I talk about this a little bit later, but we've been called about using a waiver before. So what happens is they'll call and they'll say, we have this sibling group of five that we need to place somewhere. Can we put them in your home? And I'll say, we're only licensed for four. And they'll say, we already have a waiver. If you can take all five, we'll send you all five. Now, we have not had five. They were able to get that resolved at home and keep the kids there, which is the goal. But we're not the only area that's like this. Burleigh County, Bismarck, is really overwhelmed right now. We have kids in our home from Bismarck. They don't like to place out of area because it messes up your family connections, your community connections, your school connections. But if there's nowhere for them to be, they start looking to outside. So if Burleigh County has a placement and they don't have anywhere to put them, they'll start calling. Well, let's call Mercer County. Let's call up to Garrison. Let's call wherever and see if anyone has a place for these kids. Our social worker from the Bismarck said, if you guys wanted more kids, I could get you some right now. I said, I think we're good for the minute. We've gotten called about sibling groups that are larger, five or six, where they've said, will you take the three middles? Or will you take the youngest four? Or will you take the oldest two and the youngest one? Because they don't have space for everybody, so they're splitting up siblings. I don't have any siblings, so I don't really understand this in the same way, but I'm thinking if you are a child and you're 8 years old and you were just removed from your family, as dysfunctional as it may have been, and now you're split up from half of your siblings, like, and you don't know when you're going to see them, you don't really understand what's going on, how hard is that on those kids and those parents to wonder where their kids are, you know, and know that they're not together? Now, most of the time, this stuff gets sorted out. The kids, it's not permanent. The kids go home. But if they can't go home, then they start looking for an adoptive placement. But if social workers have already struggled to keep those kids together in foster care, what's going to happen when they are looking for a permanent family? So I don't know if you guys, a lot of you are on Facebook. Back in March, there was an adorable set of five siblings that was all over my Facebook feed. These little kids from, I can't remember where they were from, Kansas, I think. And they were so cute. And everyone was sharing them. They're looking for an adoptive family for these five kids. There were 1,500 inquiries about those kids. So I thought, okay, I'm going to post some kids on my blog that need families. So I posted some sibling groups, 3, 4, 5 kids. And I thought, this time, I'm going to go back and I'm going to look and see if those kids are still available for adoption, if they're still waiting, or if they've been, I mean, you don't really know if they found a family, but you assume if they go off the website that they're probably either in the process or have a family. So some of them were not on there at all, which is great. That means that they were probably adopted. But other ones I looked up and I thought, well, that's not good. Many of the sibling groups that I saw less than a year ago when I looked him back up again, the youngest sibling was not in the picture anymore, or was not part of the group, or was not listed anymore. Some of these pages even said, we will only accept inquiries for the whole sibling group who will be placed together. I don't know the circumstances. I don't know why some of these sibling groups were split up. Maybe there was an issue that came up that they felt it was safer to place them separately. But my honest guess is that older kids seem scary. They seem like they're really hard to handle. And so they're a lot harder to place. I just can't imagine as the social worker trying to make that decision. Like, well, somebody called and they inquired and they want the 4-year-old and the 5-year-old, but they won't take the 13-year-old. How do you make that decision? Do you say, well, we're going to wait for somebody to take the whole sibling group? Or do we say, well, there's a chance for these kids. We'll split them up and we'll see what happens. And when you go to the website, if you haven't spent a lot of time on there, which Derek knows I do, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't look at some of these kids and say, oh, they must have siblings somewhere. But if you've been on there and you've seen them and then you see them again without the siblings, you know what's probably happened. So obviously there's a need for foster care and adoptive families in our area. So I'm going to show you a little clip about that.
Well, it appears you have cleared our background check, Dr. Grew. Oh, and I say you have made a list of some of your personal achievements. Thank you for that. I love reading. And I see you have been given the Medal of Honor and a knighthood. You had your own cooking show, and you can hold your breath for 30 seconds. It's not that impressive. In the name of what?
Well, here's the dealio. Things have been so lonely since my wife, Debbie, passed on. It's like my heart is a tooth, and it's got a cavity that can only be filled with children. I'm sorry. You are a beautiful woman. Do you speak Spanish?
Do I look like I speak Spanish?
You have a face como un burro.
Oh, well, thank you.
Anyway, can we proceed with this adoption? So excited.
Please tell Margot, Edith, and Agnes to come to the lobby.
I bet the mom is beautiful.
I bet the daddy's eyes sparkle.
I bet their house is made of gummy bears.
I'm just saying it. Be nice.
Aw, my caterpillar never turned into a butterfly.
That's a cheetah.
Oh.
Well, Debbie was a very lucky woman.
Who's Debbie?
Your wife. Oh, hi, girls. Girls, I want you to meet Mr. Grew. He's going to adopt you. And he's a dentist.
So I can tell you that about the only thing that is true in that video is maybe if you sweet talk your social worker, you might get your paperwork done a little faster. Tell her she has the face of a burro, though. She probably will not like that. I wish it was that easy. I also wish we had minions to fill out all our paperwork. And there's a lot of waiting. But I guess that's fortunate. At least they check you out. The steps here in North Dakota are really not that overwhelming. We've been other places where it's been, the things that they ask you to do or require of you are a little bit, they're very overwhelming. So in order to start the process to become a foster parent, you have to be at least 21, you have to be financially stable. You have to rent or own your own home. In our case, obviously we don't own our own home, but we have to carry renter's insurance so that we can cover if something happens at the house. You have to have adequate space for a child. And foster children can share with your own children if that's something that you are interested in doing. We did that when we were in Iowa. Dylan was a baby. We took in babies. They were in the same room. Here, we have chosen not to do that because our boys like to share. They are fine, and we don't mess up their space. Foster care is intended to be temporary, which is a hard one. People always say, well, how do you do that? How do you love them and then let them go? And because they need that, because the kids need you to love them. You have to be able to work as a team with social workers and other service providers. You work with a lot of people. We have a lot of appointments. We see a lot of people, and we have to be willing to work with them for the best of the kids. You have to be able to pass a background check. You don't just walk into the office and say, I'm good, I'm a dentist, and they'll, you know, give you kids. That's not how this works. We also had to go and get fingerprints, which I think was probably the hardest thing, just because making the time to get down there and get them done was a struggle. You have to be able to provide personal references. People need to say that you could work with children. And you have to have the ability to understand and show acceptance for the child's parents. So this one is a struggle for me, still, after so many years of doing this. But I just can't, and you guys have expressed this to me, I don't understand how this can happen or how parents can let this happen. But then I started to think about kind of my life. I don't know how much a lot of you know about me. I grew up in a single-parent household. My dad died when I was 8. So I had a single working mom all of my life. We were low income even before my dad died. My dad worked 2 jobs and my mom babysat, and we were still considered low income. So my dad died when I was 8. You know, you go on through school. In junior high and early high school, I dated a guy that after we broke up got super involved with drugs. And there are a lot of statistics that say I should not be who I am. Like dating when you're really young, growing up without a father figure, being below the poverty line, all these things that can add up to unplanned pregnancies, drug use, being in trouble with the law. I think sometimes, how close was I to being that statistic? You know, one wrong decision and I'm the other direction. One wrong decision and I lose my kids. I mean, it's a multitude of decisions, but like which one pushes you over the edge? And we didn't grow up in church, but I thank God every day that my mom started working with a lady who said, you want to go to church with us? And I was 14 before we got to church. And God grabbed onto my heart and turned me around. And now I get to do this instead of being on the other side. So this little boy in this picture, this is Dylan here in the Batman shirt. And this is Dakota. And Dakota was our second placement. He was our first baby placement. Our first baby placement in Iowa. His mom was the same age as me. We were both 23. I didn't know her before we took in her little boy. I'm guessing that she must have gone to a different high school than I did. But Derek, turned out, knew her sister. Her sister had been a child that was in foster care with our pastor and his wife before I started going to the church. The baby's birth mom was in foster care with another family. They had split the siblings up because there were some issues. That was done on purpose. So by the time this little boy came to us, he was 3 months old. Mom, at 23, had 4 kids removed. Well, this was the 4th child that was removed from her home. The oldest was like 6, maybe 7 at this time. So this situation, we thought for sure, I mean, the mom had already had 3 kids removed permanently. We were for sure that he was just going to be with us. Well, then Dad got involved, which I'm glad, because Dad turned out to be pretty decent once he figured out what he needed to do. He ended up getting custody of the little guy. And they As far as I know, he's still with Dad. Mom is back in jail. I just saw that the other day. So, you know, at what point do you, you know, these decisions, they just keep circulating. I mean, we're talking almost 10 years later now, since then. So I look at that, and I look at the kids in my home, and I think, and I pray a different future over them. I don't want to get a call in 10 years that, oh, so-and-so has a baby, and we want you to take the baby, you know, because you know so-and-so's mom, or you know had so-and-so, or whatever it is. I don't want that. I want to stop the cycle now. I want to be a good influence on these kids now so they make different choices. And I think as Christians, we have a unique opportunity because not only are we showing them a different moral compass, but we're showing them a different reason and a different reason why. I want these kids to know that they're loved by us and by others and by God the Father. Their situation does not make them less important to the creator of the world. So now I'm going to just show you some. Our house is crazy all the time. This was last spring, I guess a year ago. And you guys know these kids. They were in our home. We have not heard from them much other than Annabelle. You guys know Annabelle. I actually just happened to run into the other ones at Walmart the other day. They didn't see me, but I saw them, and they look like they're doing well. What else we got? Oh, okay. We've got McDonald's, the kids. It seems like everybody really seems to get along pretty well most of the time. They tend to mesh together and play, and kids are pretty versatile that way. They usually do all right. So these are two that you guys may not have known. We only had them for about a week in respite care, which I'll talk about more in a minute. As I was flipping through pictures, I was like, Andrew's always got some sort of injury to his facial area. Got a Band-Aid on his head in the one. That was Taiwan and Wakia. They were little stinkers, but they were pretty cute. Oh, you guys in the front know these kids. That was our Easter picture. Poor Miss Esther was trying to help us out, and nobody would look at the camera. That's pretty much my life right there. And we got to go to the fair, and Gemma got to hold a bunny. She was the only one that would hold it. Everybody else just petted it. And then the other picture is we packed bags for, why can't I think of what it was? For the crisis care kits. The kids thought that was a really fun thing to do. They enjoyed that. So, you know, we have a fun time at our house. It's always crazy. It's always nuts. Antoine and Rachel came over and babysat the other day because they're gluttons for punishment, I guess. And I'm sure they were worn out when they went home, but it's always crazy at our house. But a lot of times it's really fun, too. I didn't put any pictures up of people throwing tantrums and standing in time out. I probably could have, though. So you may not be able to be a full-time foster parent, and we understand that. It's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of time. But you can still, one of the things that we have done in the past is respite care. And that is so, so important. We can't leave our foster kids overnight with anybody who's not a licensed foster parent. So, like, we go to Pastor and Spouse Retreat. We can leave our boys with my mom, who's probably going to come up. But the other kids will have to go somewhere else just because she's not a licensed foster parent, even though she's totally safe, has been background checked multiple times. And so that means that they go to a family that they don't know or they don't know well. So you can become licensed as just a respite worker. I will only take kids on short term, a week, 3 days, whatever you say. They may still try to call you and place kids with you, but you can always tell them no. We've done that before. So there are some other ways you can help foster families. But I will tell you, foster parents are a stubborn bunch. We spend so much time fighting with our kids, well, maybe not with our kids, sometimes, for the best for our kids, that we feel like we can't ever let up. I don't like to accept help from people, especially, or even social workers. Like, they'll call and say, well, I can take so-and-so to that appointment. No, I'll do it. I can take them. It'll be fine. Because it feels like it's a weakness. It feels like, well, if we can't manage it now, how are they going to? No, this is my house all the time. It's okay. We're losing control here. I always feel like if the social worker takes over and does something for us, then they, when that safety net is possibly removed later of, well, now you have all these kids and they're permanently yours, well, they couldn't do it before, so how are they going to be able to do it now without our help? That said, so sometimes if you want to help out a foster family, you need to demand things. Like, if you know they're getting a placement or they have received one, offer to go to the store and pick up things they might need. There are times where kids come to our home and I'm like, oh, we don't have any diapers. We don't have any milk, whatever it would be. Offer/demand to bring them dinner. That has been, you know, all of a sudden you get four kids in your house. You're planning on making a meatloaf for dinner and now you have four extra kids. Well, that meatloaf's not going to go super far with four extra kids. Offer to babysit. You guys are good about that. We've had people watch all of our kids. We've had people watch an assortment of our children. We've had people watch our children while I've had to take other kids to appointments. Love on the foster parents' kids, both the foster kids and the biological kids. I've noticed more recently as our kids are getting older that it is hard on them. I mean, it's a different change in routine. It's different people. It's different, you know, it's just a lot of different things in our home. And so to know that they have the love and consistency here at church makes me, like, this morning, usually Andrew sits with Tara and her family. And this morning, all of a sudden, I went, I don't know where Andrew is. Because I'm so used to him being able to sit with them because they love on him. And I love that. So, yeah, he was back there with Penny because he finds somebody who will love him. Love on the foster parents. If you see somebody out and about and you know they're a foster parent, just give them a thumbs up or a smile or something. One of the best things that has ever been said to me was actually said by a birth mom. And she already had her kids back home. We were at church. And she looked at me in service, wrestling all of my children. And afterwards, she came up to me and she said, I know that you are struggling, but you are doing great. And I was, like, hysterical. I'm, like, sobbing. She had her own issues she was working through and dealing with. But she became an encourager to me. And that was such a blessing. And I think about that all the time. And her family, that family has become like another family to us. It's like, you know, we've just extended our family. And you guys are great at this one too, loving on birth families. You guys have always been so accepting of birth families when they come to our church, and I love that. It is hard when you know that something has gone on in the home to then love on the birth family, but you guys always do. I know that people have picked up kids from school for birth families. They've gone to Bible studies with birth families. They've helped move birth families. Like, I'm always so impressed. So keep that up. And I really think that's what God is about. It's about loving on people who need that love and need that help and support. So I have another short video, and then I think Derek's going to come up and finish us out.
There are 30,000 children that are in the foster care system today in the state of Texas. There are 500,000 children that are in the U.S. that's in the foster care system. And I said, who would stand with me today for these kids? That day, Nedra Wade, she stood and raised her hand and she said, Pastor, I will. And then another person stood and said, I will. And another stood and said, I will. And another stood and said, I will. Well, after the process started in our church and family after family, within 3 months, 39 children were placed in families in our church. Jesus, Jesus. What if there was more families waiting for children than children waiting for families? So we called Child Protective Services. And they said, if that happens in any county, that will be the first ever. Precious Jesus, oh, for grace to trust him more.
There is a need in our community. James 1:27 says that pure and undefiled religion is this: to care for the widows and orphans in their distress. There is a need. Not everybody can contribute in the same way, but everybody can contribute. And so I would ask that on this Orphan Sunday that you stand with the widows and the orphans, seeking to be Jesus in their lives. Let us pray. Lord Jesus, I thank you for your love. I thank you that you love and care for these widows and orphans and those who are in distress, those who are in need. And Lord, I thank you for those who are willing to stand. Those who are willing to open their hearts and open their homes, to allow children and families to enter their lives, be it for short stints or for the long haul. And so, Lord, I pray that we will stand, that we will love on the widows and the orphans in their distress, Lord, that we will meet the need. So, Lord, I pray that you speak to hearts today about what can be done, about how we can help, how we can be Jesus, a light in this world. Thank you for all that you've done in our lives. Thank you for everything that you've done for the children and the families in this community. Lord, I pray that you would continue, that you'd continue to work, that you would continue to bring children into healthy families, into forever homes, whatever it may be. Lord, thank you for caring. Thank you for standing with the widows and the orphans. We pray this in your holy name, Lord. Amen.